Walla Wani. Welcome to Earth Matters, environment social justice stories from Australia and around the world. Produced at the studios of 3CR on Wurundjeri country in Naam, Melbourne, and broadcast across this continent via the Community Radio Network. I'm your show host, Beck Horridge, and I do pay respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging. Today's episode features speakers from the Victorian Women's Climate Congress on Jarjar Wurrung country in Castlemaine. The speakers are women who changed the climate by bringing diverse voices into the rooms where discussions, negotiations and decisions about the climate challenge are made. Five speakers presented their role in bringing many voices into the room, representing students, rural women, First Nations women, older women and women with disabilities.
I'm Kelly McDonald. I'm from the National Rural Women's Coalition, and I'd just like to pay my respects to Aunty Sandra and the people of this beautiful country, and it was just such a great welcome when we first came in. I'm from Kamilaroi country, so that's in Gunnedah, northwest New South Wales. So you probably haven't heard of the National Rural Women's Coalition, but it is a not-for-profit organisation. It's one of the five National Women's Alliances now funded under the Working for Women strategy, and it's funded by Prime Minister and Cabinet. We are representing all rural, remote and regional women in all their diversity, so women with disabilities, called women, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women, women of diverse genders. And interestingly enough, often I get pigeonholed as just being an agricultural woman, which I admit I am. I'm from the land. I'm a broadacre farmer, pulses, cotton, wheat, cattle. But I also am a small business owner, and the women that are actually in farming are only 2.8% of the total of rural, remote and regional women, which is about 30% of the population of Australia. So it's quite a large group of women that we try and represent. The work of the National Rural Women's Coalition is around changing and influencing policy to benefit rural, remote and regional women. So we've got our fingers in lots of different pies. So probably I'm spread a little bit thinner than butter on toast than you'd like. So I rely heavily on partnerships and working with other groups that are the specialists in the area, and also working with grassroots women. So I'm a huge fan of the benefit of the grassroots women and the strength of that grassroots place-based, because people know the best of the areas that they live in. They know, particularly when we've seen disaster and disaster response, that the best responses to those are led by the communities in which they happen in. Now, in my little town of Gunnedah, it's a population of 10,000 people. We had 9 floods in under 2 years. And the quickest response to that is the local response. I'm not far from Coonabarabran with the big fires. And it is rural people that, in my opinion, are the forefront of seeing the impacts of climate change, because it is happening in our space. Cyclones, floods, fires and droughts. And one of my little hobby horses for those in the room is that drought is not considered a disaster, so it doesn't get that emergency funding like everything else is. And when I drove through the country yesterday, as I came through Gunnedah, through Canberra and all the way down, I noticed how dry the country is, and I know there are parts of South Australia that are still desperately in deep, deep drought. And the impacts of that on families in rural communities goes on for longer than the impact of the drought. In 2019, I was lucky enough to be at the UN for the Commission on the Status of Women. And the big push for us at that point, as you can imagine, because of the drought, was water security. In particular, water security for women. Now, the Australian government was unbelievable in their support to make sure that that became something that was agreed as part of that CSW that year. And so for me, water and water security for rural, remote and regional women is a critical part of how we survive and move forward. So I am a passionate defender of water security for our communities, for life, for sanitation. And Australia really only took notice of that in the largest drought that we'd ever had when towns on the eastern seaboard ran out of water. Because they never do, do they? It's okay for us out there if you're on a farm and you've run out of tank water or you don't have any bore water. But When it happens on the eastern seaboard, where 95% of Australians' population live, suddenly they take notice of us. So the lesson for me is about making sure that our rural, remote and regional stories transcends the Great Divide or the Simpson Desert and make sure that people know of the stories of rural, remote and regional Australia and how that they can impact them.
After talking with a group of conference participants, Kelly said this.
Our group were talking about what works in terms of advocacy for climate change. So we were talking about place-based solutions, but why sometimes that works and sometimes that doesn't work, and why sometimes women don't want to speak up and how we can encourage them to speak up. And that can be that when we have our meetings, at what time of day it is, and whether or not we make those places welcoming to women. And that is often around women's childcare and nurturing responsibilities. You know, often we're looking after parents and children, and so making meetings and places at times where that's open to everyone. We need those places to be safe, and we need people to have it advertised that children are welcome to these meetings so that mothers can bring their children so we can have these conversations and all voices are included. The other thing we talked about was outreach, and we had some really great examples during disasters when we've had centres where people can come in, but that it's not inclusive of all people, so that we're outreach and actually going out and meeting people where they're at, whether it's a community of people or individual people, is the way that we make sure that we're looking after everybody in our community. And a community's strength and resilience is only measured by the way that we treat the most vulnerable within it. And so outreach is such an important part of making sure that we're doing that. The other things we talked about this post-COVID is that when people don't want to come into meetings, that we've now got things like online, which most people hopefully have access to, but we can't assume that they all do. And that when we have these meetings, sometimes we have to welcome people in at where they're at and what they're doing. And I think of called women, you know, like they may not be comfortable walking into a space that looks like this if they don't know that they are particularly welcomed. And so let's make them welcome. Let's ask those people. And we take some of the things particularly that said by Claire to make sure spaces are welcome for everybody. There's also the issue that was brought up very bravely, I thought, by one of the people in their group, where there's often multiple grassroots groups working on the same issue within the same space. And often that can be that we're competing with each other for minimal funding, for minimal voice time, for minimal even participants in some space, and how that is not always to the benefit of us all. Now, we may need these individual groups because they're working on specific chunks of work, but there must be a way that we can bring everybody together, and we're thinking about how good the Congress is because it is a network of people. So it allows people to work in their groups and what they're doing, but it brings people together at events like this. Whatever you're representing, your voice can be heard here as part of a network. And we also talked about making sure that we are always encouraging young people, and that stands right from that point of bringing them in from their children, but all the way through, because it is young people that are going to action some of the things that we are talking about today.
Here's student representative Ellie Venning.
Namani Namini Napudni Ellie Venning. I acknowledge that I live and work predominantly on Kaurna country in Adelaide. So what I've just said is hello, my name is Ellie Venning in the native tongue of the people of the land that I live on. So as Mary mentioned, I am the National Union of Students' Women's Officer for the year. I'm studying at the University of Adelaide, doing a Bachelor's of Environmental Policy and Management, the major in politics. I'm also on the executive of my uni women's collective, and I'm also a board director of my student union. So unfortunately, I'm very busy, which is good. I love being able to approach these areas as a feminist and as an environmentalist, and I think these two things are very interconnected. A little heads up for my presentation will be that I'm mainly talking about what students are doing on campus and the importance of involving them in your broader discussions and also in the commentary around campuses as well. The segregation of gender in environmental courses in academia and about the eco-gender gap.
And here's the participant reporting back on Ellie Venning's presentation.
Wow, that woman has passion. She spoke about four primary things. The first was explaining to us older ones what is eco-gender gap. It's the difference in the way that women are studying and are passionate about environmental issues. She also explained that the environmental engineering is one that women are most likely to participate in. And this is because women care. And then the next thing she spoke about was stats. that men will profound share them and we'll all go yawn. But when a woman tells a story, we all listen, because quite often it's with heart. And then the other thing that we heard was how she spent the last week in Canberra lobbying. And she's met with not just the people in her party, but she's met with all politicians, and she found common ground.
Hi everyone, I'm Chloe Wegener. My pronouns are she, her. I also want to begin just by acknowledging Jar Jar Warong and really thank Auntie Sandra for her wonderful warm welcome and the balance that they've maintained here for thousands and thousands of years that we are all gonna now work to try and restore together. I'm a Garawal woman. I work at the Wiyana Yuthungani Institute for First Nations Gender Justice. Wiyana Yuthungani means women's voices in Dunoska's late native language, Bunabub. We're based at the ANU, work quite independently within ANU, I would say. Personally, I've grown up on Kaurna country, but I now live on Wadawurrung country down in Ocean Grove in Victoria, beautiful place in the world. And like many First Nations women, like many autistic women, like many queer women, like many young women, like many women with hidden disabilities, I've grown up in a world not made for me. But like mentors through June Oscar, who's our chair, I discovered my strength in my unique voice. But I will say I am a cisgendered woman. The Institute is Australia's first ever institute dedicated to advancing the rights, knowledges and leadership of First Nations women, girls and gender diverse people. And after speaking with over 2,000 First Nations women, girls and gender diverse people, it became clear to the team that First Nations women are doing the backbone of their communities, weaving together the social fabric that sustains all of us. We also learned that First Nations knowledge systems and approaches to caring for country are often overlooked in climate frameworks, despite women consistently highlighting their crucial role in this space. So the Institute's purpose is simple yet critical: to elevate these voices, their lived experiences, solutions as crucial to reconstructing more just, sustainable and enabling societies.
Chloe Wegener. And here's a participant describing Chloe's talk.
What we talked about, which was really quite inspirational, was that First Nations peoples do not see things in silos, that they see it totally integrated. So when they take their children onto the land, it's not just about understanding the land. It's about understanding everything to do with life. It's about the connections that the land gives us as people, and First Nations people in particular. I have to say, I'm incredibly envious of that capacity. And I think it's something, if we could learn as white settlers here, we would understand this land and ourselves much more than we currently do. And Chloe talked about the work that First Nations people are doing that we don't know about because it gets hidden, and First Nations women in particular are not seen in the work they're doing. They're not seen even in their own culture sometimes, let alone in our culture. And that's a major challenge for us if we're going to do it correctly. We also talked about the need for us to see First Nations people not just as making a contribution to our conversation, but as being the solution in our conversation. And I think that was a really important piece. The other thing that came up very briefly, but importantly, was the importance of treaty. And what's happening in Victoria with treaty is not just about creating treaty, but also making sure that truth is told, and that without truth being told, treaty is not understood in the same way.
That was a participant describing Chloe Wegener's talk about including First Nations women, girls and women-identified people in discussions and decisions addressing the climate crisis.
You're listening to Earth Matters, broadcast nationally across this continent via the Community Radio Network.
Now for some more from the Women's Climate Congress, Women Changing the Climate Conference. Claire Gibellini talking about bringing disabled people into the room.
Hello, everybody. My name is Claire. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm joining you today from the lands of the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation over here in Borlu or Perth. I do represent women with disabilities, well, globally, really. I'm a woman with multiple disabilities myself. In my day job, I do work as a policy officer with Women with Disabilities Australia, but I'm also quite heavily involved in the disaster response and emergency response spaces as a volunteer here in WA. And I'm also one of the Asia Pacific focal points for climate change and disaster risk through the International Disability Alliance. Just a few hats. I'm going to have a brief kind of discussion about the issue of the intersection of climate change and gender and disability. I'm going to see if I can get us to challenge some assumptions, if I can. So I would like everybody just close your eyes for one moment and think about women in climate change in leadership spaces. And I'm going to give you a word and I want to see what comes to mind when I do. The first word is leader. The second word is innovator. The third word is change maker. The fourth word is resilient. The fifth word is community. And the group of words is disaster response leader. Hold that in your mind. I'm going to ask you all a question. Who of you in the room thought about a woman with a disability in any of those spaces? You did, put your hand up for me. And you know, I just want to really say that it's okay if you didn't. Thank you to those who did. That makes my little heart happy. But it's okay if you didn't, because as a society, we've actually been conditioned to see people with disabilities as problems to be solved or people that are inherently vulnerable and need saving. Every single person in the world has some form of unconscious bias, but it's what you do once you know that and then what you choose to do next that can make all the difference. We know climate change is the greatest challenge of our time. We already know that it's affecting communities worldwide. Even in the metro area, we're losing our tree canopy because we have not had rain for such a long time. So it's here, there's no denying it. But we also know that not everybody experiences those impacts equally. For women with disability, we represent one of the most vulnerable groups, facing a unique and disproportionate challenge due to those combined effects of gender, inequality, disability-related barriers within systems and society, and also the climate-induced stresses. Some of those reasons are the fact that we often already have limited access to essential resources like healthcare and safe housing and financial support. For example, inaccessible infrastructure that can make evacuation during the disasters or during climate change events difficult. And then inadequate housing can actually leave us more exposed to extreme weather events. I remember in 2023, I had a very, let's call it, robust conversation with a gentleman who was in charge of the New South Wales Reconstruction Authority, who assured me that I had nothing to worry about because every single evacuation centre within New South Wales was completely and utterly accessible. Yeah, I'm not going to tell you the bad words I said, but yeah, it was a robust conversation. Secondly, we already have some degrees of social exclusion and discrimination that exacerbates the impacts that we face. We know that women with disabilities are often usually excluded from the decision-making processes that are related to climate and climate adaptation policies, and our voices and perspectives are usually overlooked, which can actually perpetuate our marginalisation, leave our needs unaddressed. The mental health impacts of climate change are also particularly severe for women with disabilities. That repeated exposure to things like disasters and displacement, but also, you know, the repeated things like heat waves, droughts, the impact of the cost of living that is only going to go up because of the impact of climate change, all of those things obviously exacerbate stress and anxiety and disrupt our routines and support networks. We also know that gender-based violence increases in times of crisis, and for women with disabilities, it's often very hard for us to escape. I mean, I know it is for a lot of women, but, you know, we face additional barriers in escaping those situations. For example, shelters that are not supportive of our needs, or we can't even get in the front door, things like that. And there's a lot of systemic violence that keeps us in those places as well. But it isn't all doom and gloom. I kind of, you know, I really wanted to have this conversation about how we could be also supporting the change. We could be agents of change. You know, every time I speak within the spaces that I work about what adaptation, what emergency services folks are looking for, they're looking for agile, you know, flexible, those sorts of things. That's how women with disabilities, along with other marginalised groups, actually live our day every day, because we're living, breathing and working in systems and societies that force us to be that way because they're not built for us. So we already got that soft skill that they're all looking for. We just need to have the opportunity to be part of that. So our lived experiences can provide hugely valuable insights into creating inclusive and effective climate solutions. If we're able to be involved in decision-making processes and leadership roles, it's been proven and we know that the climate action or the solutions or the adaptations that come from our inclusion are more equitable and responsive to the diverse needs of the community. You know, it almost becomes like a universal design piece. If it's accessible for us, it's often accessible for many others. There are already existing leadership tools that empower women with disabilities to step into advocacy roles. Those resources are around building confidence, amplifying voices, and equipping women to lead initiatives that address both disability inclusion but also climate resilience. There are mentoring programs that enable women with disability to grow into leadership positions within their workplaces and communities. I just kind of want to finish with an invitation. In many of these events and in many of the conferences that I attend around this subject, we are often seen as a problem to be solved. Women with disabilities have even been described to me as one of those wicked problems that we don't quite know how to solve. And when we're viewed that way, it doesn't get solved, right? But I want to extend an invitation to all of you and anyone that you would know to shift that thinking, to make space for the leadership of women with disabilities in the work that you do. Ensure that we're not only part of the conversation, but at the forefront of solutions. If that's as simple as finding an accessible venue for dialogues, if it's about funding initiatives that are led by women with disabilities, whatever we do, let's actively work together to dismantle those barriers that are preventing our participation. If we do this, we have the chance to build a future where no one's left behind, where we as women with disabilities and women from other marginalised groups actually lead the way in creating those resilient communities that are capable of thriving in the face of climate change and hopefully being part of the pushback against the erasure of some of our rights that previous speakers have spoken about. So, yeah, please invite us in. You'd be really surprised at the depth of contribution that we can make.
Claire Gibellini talking about bringing disabled people into the room. And here's the next speaker, talking about bringing diverse voices into climate negotiation rooms. Beverly was talking prior to the last federal election.
Hello, everyone. My name is Beverly Baker, and I have the privilege of being the president of the National Older Women's Network. The national body is different to our state affiliates. We are purely a lobby group, which means for me, everything is political. And this is political. We are facing an election in 5 weeks. Environment is not the top. What is the top? Cost of living. We are arguing about whether or not we have enough money to buy some more junk from Temu rather than having a look at the real thing that is going to impact on all of us, which is the complete and utter devastation and catastrophes of our environmental collapse. And environmental collapse is what we are seeing. I am a swimmer. I have spent the last 10 years chasing coral. I found coral in Raja Ampat this year, but what I also found in that most remote part of the Coral Sea is coral bleaching. It is there. We, in my lifetime, have wiped out the largest living organism on the planet, and that is the coral reef system of the Great Barrier Reef. We are destroying this. Going along with that destruction is the complete destruction of civil society. We have part of our discussion today to talk about challenging the status quo. There ain't no such object anymore. Trump has showed us that the status quo does not exist. The rule of law doesn't matter. The rights of humans doesn't matter. The climate doesn't matter. He's pulled out of the World Health and the support that Americans gave across that to stop the spread of viruses. He has just pulled out of the world trade. And my money is he's going to pull out of the UN. And why? Because the UN's in front of his bloody Trump Towers and he wants to knock it down so he has a river view. But that's not the issue. The issue is that the UN is here and has grown up over the time, generated and pushed by women, and women are being marginalised. Look at the rights in America of women. Look at our states here. And see, wherever we've had a change of government across state, the issue of abortion is back on the agenda. Everything we live, work, believe in and dream of is dependent on that far-right misogynist attitude not getting up here as it's taken over and dominated the states.
Beverly Baker, CEO of the Older Women's Network. And here's the report back from a participant on what Beverly talked about.
Hi everyone, I'm Suji, a proud woman of colour from Nepal. I am going to present some key takeaways from Beverly's discussion. A big round of applause to this woman. She is so passionate. With all the aggression, with all the energy and passion, she says that everything is political. And she wants to be an ancestor whose offspring knows that she absolutely did everything to provide a sustainable environment for them. Climate denial is fostered by men as a misogynist agenda, and the climate deniers are going to rebuild the past, where young men were seduced in believing that there was a time where women were put to a place. So the four ways are climate and politics are deeply intertwined. Climate denial is driven by a misogynist agenda with far-right leaders pushing regressive ideologies. She even made fun that the right wings are going so right that we need binoculars to see them. The rising misogyny and male supremacy, efforts to control women's voices are escalating with climate deniers romanticizing a patriarchal past. The other thing we talked about was environmental and social crisis we are in, the destruction of ecosystems like Great Barrier Reefs and parties supporting nuclear energy as their agenda in the elections, targeted violence, including gender-based violence and attacks in Gaza. Everything is interconnected. And finally, the need for bold advocacy, engaging men across generations, speaking out boldly in every forum and resisting silent complicity by women are crucial for change. We need to be in the conservative center or left to amend this far-right extremism right now. Thank you.
A big thank you to the Women's Climate Congress for bringing together today's Earth Matters. Check out their website. And to the women who are on the show. I'm Beck Horridge. Bye till next time.
You've been listening to Earth Matters, Community Radio's National Environment Justice Program. If you missed any of today's show, you can find our podcasts at 3cr.org.au/Earth Matters. Or if you're listening via iTunes or any other podcasting service, why not rate us and leave us a review and help spread the word. Earth Matters would like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for their financial support and the Community Radio Network for getting the program out to you. Earth Matters is produced in the studios of 3CR. On Wurundjeri country. If you'd like to get in contact, you can send us an email at earthmatters3cr@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page. I hope you can tune in next time for one more Earth Matters.
This is what I recorded around a fire at the Maules Creek anti-coal mine camp about a decade ago.